Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And ideas. I mean, ideas. What a thing. Information. What a thing. In a recent study of the University of Pittsburgh and the University of California, they both got together and they tried to figure out what is it about women having fuller hips. Here's what they found out. Women with a fuller hourglass figure tend to be more intelligent and bear more intelligent offspring than do women with trimmer hips. Oh, it sounds like good news, doesn't it? They actually had a formula. If you divide your hip ratio, or inches, number of hips, by your waist. Now, you divide your waist by your hip. And if you come up with 0.6 or 0.7, you are at the highest echelon of intelligence. How do you like these apples? Now, they're not talking about... They're saying that all that stuff that we hate, you know, all that stuff on your hips that you hate, that weight on your hips, the fat hips you don't like, they're a sign of intelligence. Not only that, but they are a sign that you're going to give way to intelligent children. Now, this is fascinating because one of the things we always try to figure out is why people are attracted to certain people. Why does the hourglass figure attract men? Well, we figured because somewhere... In our history, men figured out that this is the women who would bear the best children because they have the wider hips. Therefore, they have the head can descend down without killing the mother, which at one point it did back in our evolution. So we thought the wider hips were attractive because to a man, that meant that she would give better children. But no, it's not that. It's the intelligence. She would have more intelligent children, and they would have a better chance of pushing the species along. It's like why women like creative men, because they would find creative solutions back in the caves way back when a man was creative, you know, like if he drew on the walls, he attracted a lot of women. Not because he was an artist, not because he was suave, but because he had a creative solution, idea, mind. And that would help the species survive. So why do I bring this to you about fuller hips? Fuller hips used to be seen as only for the childbearing capability, but we're now learning that fuller hips are... connected to higher levels of intelligence, especially in the... That's due to the omega-3, by the way. Omega-3 fatty acids that are stored in the hips. They help the development of the brain. They actually help the growth of the brain. And if you got a mama with hippier hips, you got a better chance of being intelligent than if you have a mama with skinny hips. So don't have your mother be a model. Well, your mother wouldn't be a model, right? And you couldn't choose anyway. But anyway, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's things like this that intrigue me, and they should intrigue you, you know, because it's how much can you learn? What is the secret to success, a young man asked me. Because everybody, you know, Deepak Chopra has a wonderful book, The Seven Secrets of Success, and everybody sells success in one form or another. There's a wonderful lecture going on, I think, at the Learning Center on the secrets to success over the next few days. It's free. It's all about what we've been learning to help you become successful. But I have a secret about what leads to success. I can guarantee you that if you follow this formula, you will have a much greater chance of succeeding. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. If you want to know, young man or young woman, as an elder, as I say to you, you want to know what you how to succeed, I want you to think about the following things. I want you to think about what is it that you don't know. And I want you to proceed for the rest of your life finding the things that you don't know and learning about them rather than faking them. Okay? So, for example, if you're in a mental health profession, there's so much to know. You know, there's so much to know in the mental health profession, but most mental health professionals I know who are not physicians would like to know more medicine. They'd like to know more about medicine. They'd like to know more about the physical structures of the body. They'd like to know more science. You know, do they know it? Well, they pick up an article every now and then. Do they learn it, really learn it? No. They make believe they know it. Just as psychiatrists think they know about emotions, but they don't know about emotions because they haven't had much training in psychology. So they don't know about emotions. They make believe they know about emotions. People make believe they know about everything. People sell you what they know, that they make believe they know. People make believe that they know something and sell you what they make believe they know. It's confusing, isn't it? Okay, so now how do you know about this? Let's break it into categories. How do you find out what it is you don't know, my friends? This is very important, knowing what you don't know. Very, very important. What don't you know about your body? There's a good question for you. Why do you pass gas? Well, you think you know? I found out years ago, I found out that if I eat bread and I eat fruit at the same time, for some reason or other, I don't like the feeling in my stomach. Now, chemically, you could figure that all out. But I was always curious, what is it that I don't like this feeling? What was it about? Well, I did a little research on it, and there's enough good reason why I would learn about how bread and fruit at the same meal don't go together. You know, orange sandwiches are not a good idea for me. What don't you know about your body? How does it work? Do you know about your bone structure? Do you know about your muscles? Do you know, in today's society, you have to become your own physician. You have to learn about yourself. You could depend on others. You could ask others. You can't know everything, right? I mean, is it all about being a brainiac? No. No, but you want to know. What is it you don't know? If you don't know what you don't know, or if you know what you don't know, then at least you could get somebody who you really, really trust. And you could say, well, I trust that you know this thing that I don't know, so you'll tell me about it whenever I need it. Like, for example, accounting. You may not know accounting, but you could hire an accountant. And you could say, I don't know about accounting, and I don't want to spend my time learning about accounting, so I'll have an accountant that I completely trust, one who I know knows about accounting. But then it's a funny thing. As you get older and more successful, you're going to need that knowledge about accounting. You're going to need to know it. So you're going to need your accountant to teach you what he knows. You see, you can't just say, I'm going to let somebody else do it. Because eventually you have to watch over the accountants. A good head of a corporation is a great accountant. They know how to count the numbers. What don't you know about your skills? What skills don't you have that you'd like to have? Let's say you don't have language skills. Language skills. Let's say you don't understand the English language that well. Let's say you don't have a good vocabulary and you want to learn it, right? Or language skills, like maybe you don't speak a second language well that you need in your job. Know what you don't know and spend time learning what you don't know rather than faking what you don't know. Now, this is a very important thing about faking what you don't know, because a lot of people get through life faking what they don't know, and every time, and they feel like fakes. Hey, if I would ask you about something you really know, can you think of something you really know? You really know how to bake a cookie? You really know how to bake a chocolate chip cookie? You sure you really know? Do you know how to cook bake a chocolate chip cookie from scratch? From the cocoa bean? Oh, there we go. You didn't know anymore. Right? How does that cocoa bean become chocolate chip that you buy, that you make into a chocolate chip cookie? But you know how to make a chocolate. You know, do you know how to cook an egg? Do you know how to boil water? Do you know how to boil water? What degree do you boil your water to? Oh, you don't know that, right? Be curious about what you know. It doesn't matter. You could just boil water because boiling water is boiling. Do you know how to make pasta? Sure, you know how to make pasta. Pastas, these are things you know. What don't you know about cooking? A lot. Do you have to know it? No. But don't fake it. Now, here are things that you do care about for your profession. Do you know about computers? Do you know about communication devices like cell phones? If you don't know about it, and if you're somebody who is in a professional world nowadays and saying, well, I haven't gotten a computer yet, right? This is, you're at the point in life when people are now throwing away computers because they're finding computers in themselves obsolete because the handheld devices are replacing the actual laptop computers. And somewhere along the line, you know, you may have missed it, but, you know, you're missing a whole world of information. If you don't know about computers, you could defend yourself and say, well, I don't want mechanical things. I just want to live up in the woods. Okay, I agree with you. That's great. And I'll bet you know about animals. I'll bet you know about the deer. You know, they're eating your vegetable garden. I'll bet you know how to not have them eat your vegetable garden and not hurt them either. What do you know? You know, there's very few, I'll bet you know secrets that if you had a grandchild and a grandchild said, Grandma, why is the moon orange sometimes? And you may be a grandma who explains it, and you may have a grandpa who says, I don't know. I know a man who used to say, there are only two things in life I don't know. Only two things in life I don't know. If you would ask him a question, you'd say, how do you line up a door? He'd say, there are only two things in life I don't know, and that's one of them. It's cute, isn't it? All right, what do you know? Where are we going with this? Because this is essential for success, my friends, even though I'm kidding with you about it. What don't you know about your mind? What don't you know about your mind? Why do you get so angry? Why do you get so excited? Why do you get so jealous? Why do you get so frightened? Why do you get so sad? Well, these are questions. And they're questions that we have about ourselves. And the way we can't answer them is what limits our success. If you don't know what it is about you that's creating these feelings, you could say, I get excited after I drink coffee, or I see a good-looking person walking down the street. So therefore, my excitement is chemical. You could say that. You could say your excitement is emotional. Do you know? Do you know for sure? Why do you have such lousy relationships over and over again? Why do you choose the wrong partner? And isn't that a question you would want to know the answer to? Now, I'm not saying you should ask a therapist because, oh my God, I don't know if therapists know the answers. Because therapists, if you look closely at their relationships, they're not very much better than your relationship. So who knows if they know the answer? They have theories too, but you have to learn about you. You have to get the answer to you. You have to get the answer to as what it is about you that you don't know. When I ask you to call in today, I'm going to ask you to call in with things that you don't know about yourself. Okay? What don't you know? What don't you know about your sexuality? Now, here's an issue for you. You can consider this an issue of the mind or an issue of the body, or actually for some people an issue of your profession. What don't you know about your sexuality? What is it? What is it you don't know? Do you know why you have orgasms sometimes and not at other times? Do you know why what your mood changes are? Do you know why you can become sexually aroused at times and not at other times? Do you know why certain images turn you on and other images don't turn you on? Why do you get turned on at the sight of mittens? You know, why? What is this all about? What don't you know about yourself? And why don't you find out? What is it about yourself? I'll tell a story about a young man. He went out with this woman who was a Playboy bunny. She told him she was a Playboy bunny, and he was so aroused, so excited. She was just an average-looking woman, average-looking person. She was not spectacular-looking, but she worked at the old Playboy club. And she said she was a Playboy bunny, and he talks about how it was remarkable to him how aroused he was at the thought of her every minute, no matter when. He just couldn't stop being aroused by her, where he wasn't aroused by other people, by other women who are even more beautiful. And then he asked himself the question. He said, what is the thing? And he remembered that when he was a little boy, young boy, 12 years old, 13 years old, he used to use Playboy magazine as his source of his erotic arousal. So he would, you know, masturbate to this magazine over and over again as a kid. So therefore, when he met a woman who represented the magazine, she got all of that arousal. Well, you know, the amazing thing is the minute that he uncovered this, he lost interest because he figured out what was driving him. Wouldn't you like to know what drives you? Wouldn't you like to know what drives you? I don't know the answer, and I'm not going to send you anywhere. Because, I can't tell you, but you, somebody who is so punchy about asking for the truth and trying to find out that the truth, that you can't even ask for directions. You know, you ever get caught asking for directions? You want to know how to get someplace? What do you know? Who do you trust? Do you trust the authorities? Do you trust the authorities to give you good guidance? Do you trust your church to give you good guidance? This is a good question. You go to your priest, and you say to your priest, I don't know, I'm not sure, should I have sex with this man I'm not married to? You know, and the priest may be interested in the fact that if you are married, you perpetuate the church in some way, and in his mind, he thinks it's God is going to judge you for this. So he says to you, no, you should not have sex until you're married. And he gives you advice. And with the advice is coming from self-interest or interest in his agenda. I remember once, many years ago, I traveled to see a guy who was a very well-known guru. He was a follower of Rajneesh. He was like this amazing guy. And he came into New Jersey, and I remember he was staying in New Jersey. And in order to travel to see him, I had to travel 25 miles. And then when I got to him, I had to climb up this huge mountain to get to the top of the mountain. Believe it, it's sounding like a joke, isn't it? It was true, because I wanted to ask him. He was supposed to be such a wise man. And I said to him, I said, so tell me, what do you advise I do? And he said, wear orange. And I said, what do you mean wear orange? He was wearing an orange robe. He said, wear orange is, he says, I wear orange. I said, you mean I should follow your guru? He says, sure, that's what you should do. But I said, you mean I traveled 25 miles and climbed up this mountain only to hear you say I should wear orange and do what you're doing? He said, well, what else do you think I would tell you? That's what I do. So there, it was a big lesson to me. To me, it meant, if you ask somebody something, they're going to tell you what they believe in based on what they do or what they sell. So then how do you find out? What's your truth? What are your questions? Right? I mean, people are afraid. I knew somebody who had a broken window recently, and she brings a broken window. The window's not working right. She brings it in to get it repaired. They tell her, oh, it's not your window, it's your mirror. And you got to get the mirror repaired. And so she has to get the mirror repaired. And then they say there's some damage in the door. And she gets the door repaired. And the window still doesn't work. And she's just asking herself, how do I find out what's really going on? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. The problem with all of you, you see, the problem for everybody out there is asking the question. Sometimes you're afraid of what you don't know. afraid. Do you know that there's an opportunity through imaging for most people to get an almost exact picture of their bodies? You could get blood tests, you could get urine tests, you could get hormone tests, you could get MRIs, you can get all kinds of total body images. You could know everything that's going on inside your body. You could know what your body looks like, feels like, senses like. You could even find out what your potential mortality rate is. You could figure out when you might die. Right? You could tell by the heart, this analysis, so on and so forth. They do this. You could have all that information. You know most people don't want the information. They don't want to know it. Why don't you want to know it? I don't want to know. Because I want to live in mystery? No, that can't be the reason. Why don't you want to know? You think it's too overwhelming to have all the information? What is reality? Here's a question for you. If you go out on a date with somebody for the first time, are they real or are they Memorex? What are they really like? You know, what is this person really like? I remember we used to have a couples counseling, which was called pre-screening, that we did here where I work at the DeMille Center. And we would invite couples who wanted to get married, who were going to get married, to pre-coupling counseling. So they would come in, and they would come in 6 weeks before they were going to get married. And we did an experiment, and the experiment was we thought this is really such good mental health. We are going to get you to know each other really well, so we're going to put you in a room with each other for a full week. We will bring you food. You will only go to bathrooms, right? You will go to the bathrooms, but when you're in the room alone, no distractions, no radios, no televisions, no books. You're going to get to know each other, and you will know within 1 week of being naked with somebody you intend to spend the rest of your life with, what they're like. Nobody survived more than 3 days. And we weren't even charging them for this because it was just like a test. Nobody wanted to know each other on that level. You don't want to know your intended bride naked for... I mean, just think about it. You're staring at them and you're seeing things and smelling things and, you know, nobody wanted to do it. So maybe the question here is not that we don't know what we don't know, but we don't want to know what we don't want to know. And the key to success and why there are only a few successes in life is because there are people who challenge that and they say, I don't care. I want to know. I want to know when I'm going to die. I want to know what's going to help me live longer. I want to know what's good in my mind. I want to know what's bad in my mind. I want to know about my relationships. I want to know about my potential in relationships. I want to know what kind of relationship I could have. I want to know what's the best odds of having good children, you know, children who will be whatever. I want to know how to help my children grow up. I want to know, I want to know, I want to know. And I want to not just leave it in somebody's hands, especially not the physicians. I'm not going to just trust them to tell me what pill to take. I want to know, and I want you to know. You know, there's another problem when you're young, attractive, verbal, intelligent. You see, what Yavis syndrome, we call it, young, attractive, verbal, intelligent, successful, which doesn't mean really successful, but successfully potential, the Yavis syndrome, which many people have, there's a problem with it, because the problem with the Yavis syndrome is you can fake almost anything when you're attractive. When you're attractive, you could get away with a lot of things. When you're verbal, you get away with a lot of things. When you're successful, not when you're successful, when you're young, attractive, when you're young, you get away with a lot of things. You do. Youth gets a lot of excuses, and attractiveness and verbalness does. Intelligence, you could weave yourself in and out of things so many different ways. So there's a problem with having gifts. The gifts sometimes stop you from learning. That's why we think of the intelligence not going along with the woman who is very attractive, because we look at a very attractive woman, especially one with full hips, and we don't suspect intelligence because we think, oh, they're too attractive. They get along in life based on their good looks. Well, it's kind of a disease having good looks. Being very attractive means you could skate by. And you don't have to look very far. You don't have to examine yourself very much because people are loving you for your looks or for your charisma or for your intelligence. You see? It's not so easy. It's not easy being good-looking. I mean, it is easy being good-looking, but that's the problem. It's easy being good-looking. Those are the ones who fake it the most. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm bringing you questions because I think the biggest question that you could have in life that contributes to your success and to your potential success is the one. What don't you know? What do you need to know? How are you going to go about knowing it? How are you going to go about finding out? What don't you know about you? What don't you know about the world? What skills do you need? Not to control everything around you, but just so that you could be more peacefully in this world. And that's my gift. That's my gift to you. And that's the gift I hope to give to everybody who I know or who I ever meet. Just the knowledge, the information, you know, of helping a person learn how to find what it is that they need to know and then finding out what the answers are. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. We'll take calls as soon as we get back from our break. We're going to take a short break. I will play you something by Wax Taylor. Believe it or not, you've never heard of Wax Taylor. But it kind of addresses the issue. And then when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll take a short break. Be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Hello.
You know, sometimes we're not prepared for adversity. When it happens, sometimes we're caught short. We don't know exactly how to handle it. Sometimes we don't know.
Just I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Do you know who I am?
I don't know.
Is it true?
I don't know.
Are you being coy?
Well, I don't know.
Don't get me mad.
We only want to ask you a couple of questions.
Do you know him?
I really don't know.
Who else was with you?
I don't know.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Really don't know.
Do you think I had something to do with this?
Don't be afraid. You understand? I'm trying to help, that's all. That's all. But you must cooperate.
What?
I don't know. So, you know, there's one very important point being made there in that piece by Wax Taylor, which is that when you're a kid and questions How are questions greeted when you're a child? Are questions greeted with curiosity? I mean, people really took interest, or did they consider you a pain in the butt for asking questions? How about this one? Why is a crooked letter? Did you ever hear that when you were a kid? You never did. Oh, it's amazing. We used to grow up, where I grew up, if you asked why anything, they would say, oh, why is a crooked letter? Meaning you shouldn't ask. Huh. And that's what we were told. We were told we were not allowed to ask. We grew up in Catholic school, where we asked questions of what didn't make sense. And they would say, no, don't ask, just trust. Have faith. Okay, that makes sense. But how many things can you have faith in? 212-209-2900. How many things do you just have to trust? You know, how many things? I mean, eventually you've got to know what you've got to know without trusting somebody else. And if you're a kid when you're growing up and somebody doesn't want to answer your question and greets your questions badly, you actually shut off your curiosity and you stop becoming curious. There is nothing more beautiful than watching somebody who is very curious. Oh, my gosh, when they're really curious. You know, when you watch a child open up a box, the present comes in a box, and they hang out in the box for a long while, and the box is fascinating, more fascinating than the toy, which it probably is. That's such a great thing to watch a child do that, to watch a kitten explore a new toy. It's such a fascinating thing. You should see me. Give me something, and I'll spend hours with it because I'm just amazed at how things work and how they look. Curiosity and being able to learn, such a wonderful thing, but people, it gets shut off in people. They don't want to know anymore, you know. They don't want to know about themselves, and I think somewhere it gets stunted and somewhere we got to bring it back up. 212-209-2900. Let's take some of your calls today. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. We'll take another call. Hi there. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. 212-209-2900.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Oh, Armand. My name is B. Carlos from Wyandanch.
B. Carlos from Wyandanch.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Well, I was curious. It seems like I'm always questioning when I get to a certain point in life. I work in a school. And I seem to run in constant problem with authority. And I'm always saying, well, why?
And you know that about yourself, right?
I think I do.
Because you used to hide behind it. You used to, like, if you're like everybody else I know, you used to say, well, it's because they did this, the police did this, and the teachers did this, and they're all pigs, and they're all animals. You did that for a long while, but then finally, Carlos... B. Carlos is your name?
Yes.
B. Carlos has the courage to say, hey, you know, maybe it's not about them. Maybe it's about me. Maybe it's about me and authority.
Okay.
What is it about me that responds to authority this way? Is a question you're asking, right?
Yes.
Congratulations. That's a great question. I wish everybody would ask that question.
But I like to question authority also.
But that's a different thing.
Okay.
See, questioning authority is the same as having trouble with authority.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Of course, you can always question authority. Everybody can. You'll always find flaws. But I'll help you point in the direction. When you were little, who was the authority?
My great grandmother.
And how was she?
She kind of let me get away, Armand.
Okay. So let me ask you another question then. If you were little and your great-grandmother was the authority, where was your father?
Never seen him. Seen him once in my life.
And what do you know about him?
Absolutely nothing, other than he was part of the donor for me being here.
And you saw him once in your life?
I've seen him once.
And what was he like when you saw him?
He didn't know who I was. I'm 51 now. I seen him when I was about 42. He didn't know who I was. He thought I was the man who brought me in to introduce him to him. He thought I was the other man's son. He had no clue who I was. But I looked at him with such an amazement and a wonder of as to why. But I never would ask him that.
What was the question you'd never ask?
I didn't want to ask him what happened. You never try to contact me. Because at this time, he was pretty much at the end of his life. And he was a young man. He kicked out at about 2 weeks after I met him.
So throughout your life, through the first 41 years of your life, you had an image of a father who left you and your mother in the hands of your grandmother, and so you grew up without a father.
Correct.
Right? And therefore, you had very specific feelings about this man, your father, who wasn't there. You were angry at him.
I agree.
Now, if you're angry at your father, then the first guy that comes along who looks like an authority is going to get a whack in the head. I'm sure you didn't like the police too much.
We had trouble.
You had trouble with the police.
Yes, absolutely, in my teenage years.
Yeah, in your teenage years, of course. Why not? You don't have a daddy. You're angry at everybody who's a daddy. And that still carries on today.
Ah. But why do I run into these authority figures that seem to push me? I don't know.
I'm going to tell you.
I'm at a point where I know I need to break. I need to get past this ceiling. I need to get past this glass bubble.
Yeah, Carlos. What are you saying?
Yes.
B, Carlos.
B.
The reason that you're running into these guys is because they're your teachers. You see, they're here. They're a gift to you, each one of them. Each one of them is inviting you to get past this. Each one of them say, come on, here I am. I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to be stupid. I'm going to act like a stupid authority. And I'm going to get you once again, Carlos. I'm going to get you so mad at me, that you're just going to lose it once again. And they're your teachers. They're the ones where you're going to learn, because eventually you're going to see you're not my father. You're not my father. You're not my father. Now, wait. Here's a difference for you. Now, I'm going to show you a difference right this minute.
Okay.
Right now on the telephone with me,
yes.
You don't have that feeling.
No.
But I'm an authority.
I've always listened. I've listened to you. I've moved to New York about 5 years ago. So.
Okay, so how come you don't have that feeling towards me if I'm an authority? What's the difference between me and all the other guys? And let's not say, I mean, what's the difference? Yeah, how do you see the difference?
Because you resonate to me like it's authority, but you're not challenging me only to look into myself, not of who I am. You don't challenge, well, who I am to me. I mean, you represent challenging me to a point of raising my consciousness a little, I don't know.
Well, you're doing good. And what you're saying is, you know that I respect you.
Mm.
You know that.
Good word, yes.
And since you know that I respect you, you don't have any battle with me. Because I acknowledge you and I respect you. And the trouble is, with everybody else out there, you don't know. You don't see their respect. They don't show that respect for you. So therefore, it automatically engenders this part of you that just wants to fight back.
Uh-huh. One last question. I must let you go. I'm about to have a meeting with an authority. And this person has seemed to have been, from the time he and I've met, he's met me on one occasion. I'm a custodian, and he says to me, you're not a custodian, and they fired me, but they brought me back, and I have to meet with him again, and I have all of these crazy feelings, and I'm saying, you know, how could I take the edge off or respect him so that he could, I don't know.
Well, there are two ways he could do it. Are you going to meet with him in private?
Yes.
Okay, here's one way you do it. Get ready for this. Do you have a pencil?
Yes.
Write this down. There seems to be something about me that pisses you off.
Uh-huh. Just straight out.
Oh, no, listen, I'm not finished. There seems to be something I'm doing. That's it, something I'm doing that pisses you off.
Uh-huh.
Would you tell me what it is so I could stop doing it?
Okay.
You tell me what it is so I could stop doing it. Now, that's a very huge tool I'm giving you. Because when you confront somebody who is inadvertently angry and slyly angry and taking jabs at you, when you confront them directly on it, you say...
You've described this person without seeing him. You've described him to his highest accent.
Right. So what you want to say to him is say, there's something I must be doing that's getting you angry. Tell me what it is, and I'll stop doing it. You see, you capitulate right away. You say, you tell me what it is that I'm doing that's getting you angry. You tell me what that is, and I will stop doing it. You're right from the beginning. Instead of asking him, why is it that you're always angry at me and stuff like that, just say, what is it that I'm doing that makes you angry? Tell me what it is, and I'll stop doing it. So that's one attack. You got that?
Yes.
The other attack is, what is this guy going to be wearing when you see him?
Well, likely he's in a suit, you know, real stuffy, like, he's in a suit, sitting, looking at me with a slight gaze.
Ask him where he got his tie. Look at his tie and admire it. And ask him where he got it. And if he said somebody gave it to him, so you just say, boy, somebody must love you a lot. Just admire the tie.
Okay. That's where he got his tie. Okay.
You don't ask him where he got his ties. You say to him, I see that you... Wow, what a beautiful tie you're wearing. That's really beautiful. Where'd you get that? Just like that.
Okay.
Okay, he'll say he bought it at a store and say it's really pretty. And just leave it at that. Or he'll say his daughter gave it to him. And you say, wow, somebody really loves you. And then continue your conversation.
One last thing, and this is it. He says to me, he said, you reminds me of my first wife. See, I love her, but I divorced her. And I'm saying, I was trying to think like Armand. I said, what is he saying to me? I was in this meeting with him, with the representation and all that around the table. He said, you know what? You remind me of my first wife. I liked her, but I divorced her. And then he began to proceed, said, well, I'm about to go through with another wife. And I almost responded to him, you don't have any friends.
Yeah, you see, that would be, since there's somebody you need, it would be okay if you felt like wiping him out.
Yes, I didn't.
You know,
want
but instead of taking him on.
I did not challenge him.
Right? Telling him, you know, I would stupidly say to the man, what a compliment. You could see yourself married to me?
Oh, see, I was trying to think like
what a compliment. Oh, my God almighty.
My computer couldn't download it. Okay, Armand.
Okay, have a good evening.
Yes.
Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Yes, there is something. A man told me earlier today that he was trying to think about what the high road is all the time, what you do when you're being thrown garbage at. Now, a friend of mine wrote me a note about a garbage truck, and he said, you know, he said he was driving along, and he said he was in back of a garbage truck, and he had a choice of either getting angry or upset with the garbage truck, and he realized that he chose not to. He chose to cool down instead, and he thought about it, and he came up with this solution and this idea in his mind that everybody carries a lot of garbage, and sometimes it's just got to be dumped. And if you take it too seriously, sometimes you react to it because the garbage is being dumped at your doorstep, and you think it's about you. If instead you just smile and step aside when the garbage is being dumped, you know, and you could smile and you don't take it personally, you know, then you could just go around the garbage truck. Or give the garbage truck enough time to do its dumping so it'll move on. Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Very often people will dump their garbage on your doorstep. Just let them do it. Pass them on. Feel sorry for them that they had to carry so much for so long. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question about the human mind. Can the subconscious mind be controlled by the conscious mind?
Okay, that's a good question. All right, let's see. Now, you know, gurus, now, there are a couple of yogis who learn to do that, and they learn to actually control, you know, part of the subconscious mind is your breathing, is the mechanisms that runs your autonomic nervous system. And we do know that people can consciously control their autonomic nervous system, which we used to think was automatic, which is why they called it the autonomic nervous system. And we've learned that gurus can slow their breath.
Yeah, I've heard that.
To a point where they use very little oxygen and they could stay buried for like a long period of time.
Right.
So if that's true, then I am sure we could use our conscious mind to control our unconscious mind. But why would we want to control it as opposed to live with it in harmony? Give me an example of your unconscious mind with which you're uncomfortable. What part of your unconscious mind is bothers you?
I have no idea. I don't have that kind of access to my unconscious mind. The only access...
Well, you might have it through other people's observation of you.
What?
You might have it through other people's observation of you. You might have other people who say to you, you know, you're too much in your mind.
Uh-huh. Well, I, from what I've read and my experiences in therapy... the unconscious mind, you know, theoretically, okay, intellectually, is usually expressed through slips of the tongue and the pen and making mistakes and doing things you don't want to do and you don't know why you're doing them, and through dreams. And so, you know, I cannot conceive of controlling the subconscious mind, you know, consciously, and saying, hey, do this, do that, do this, you know, and so on and so on, you know, to make me happy or whatever, or achieve my, my goals. I do not conceive. And even Webster says, defines the subconscious or the unconscious as that part of the mind not readily accessible to the conscious mind.
Right.
So the thesis that it can be controlled to me seems bogus.
Well, you mean because by very nature of the fact that it's not available to the conscious mind, we shouldn't be able to control the unconscious mind.
Yeah.
I understand your conflict, but I wanted to ask you this thing about you once again.
Okay.
What is it about you that you would love to have a better take on? What is it about you you don't understand? What is it about the way you are with people, and especially, I'm going to ask you, in love relationships that you don't understand?
Okay.
What's your name, by the way?
I'll tell you what the way I communicate, you know, with the world and with myself. I am an isolationist, so I think unconsciously my mind is telling, my unconscious mind is telling, is making me, and my, as well as my conscious mind, makes me fearful, I believe. I'm just saying this now for the first time. Communicating and making contact with people because I am really a total isolationist. You know, I have no circle of friends. I'm not married. I've been single all my life. You know, I avoid, human contact in a social way. Artistically, I can... associate and communicate and interrelate with people. On a personal level, though, I'm all alone.
And how old are you now?
I'm 77.
Uh-huh. That's early enough. So, 77 years old and an isolationist.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though you say you're an isolationist, here's a funny thing. What's your name, by the way?
George.
George, here's a funny thing. I've spoken to you before, haven't I?
Correct.
You know, George, you're not so totally isolationist because you're connected to me because I know you. And you know me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got some connection, right?
Yeah, some.
Some, right. Some. And so the question you have about yourself is really, should I join the human community? Would they welcome me? And how do I get outside the door?
Exactly.
Those are the questions.
Yeah.
See? And those are not in your unconscious mind.
No.
Those are in your conscious mind.
No.
Your unconscious mind says keep the door locked.
Exactly.
So this is the conversation we need to have between your conscious mind and your unconscious mind.
Mm.
And you know, there's a woman I know who facilitates. Her name is Judy Silberstein. She facilitates those very discussions. She actually has two parts of her brain talking to each other. And she has them talking to each other and making some kind of a negotiation because it's eventually about a deal. 77 years old, George, you sound pretty vital to me.
I am.
So if you're vitality, you still got some room to go and you got plenty of people to teach, you know, with the knowledge that you have. I'd love to welcome you myself.
I'd like just a quick general question.
Sure.
When I recall my dreams, you know, upon waking, I write them down as I, you know, have, you know, envisioned them when I'm awake. I have read some of Freud's interpretation of dreams, and I've never gone through the steps that he suggests one does after writing the dream down, which is to then take them element by element and free associate, you know, writing down. Do you think that would be a fruitful exercise or, you know, endeavor?
Yes, I think it is fruitful, but, you know, here's the problem.
Yeah.
When you're looking in a mirror, you're looking in the mirror with the same eyes that are looking in the mirror. So the problem that we have is whatever blocks you would have looking through the free association, which is what the free association is supposed to do. It's supposed to release the blocks that you have.
Exactly.
You see, it's still the blocks are going to come through. So let's say, for example, you had a dream about being eaten by a tiger, and you had a free association with tiger. And you had tiger, tiger, tiger. But tiger really means that you were afraid that your mother wanted to kill you when you were a baby. Mm. If you got even anywhere near that, your mind would change the image. So that's a thing to do with somebody else around if you could do it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
thank
really
you
helpful.
For your time. I want to let give somebody else a chance. Thank you very much.
Hey, George, let me tell you something.
What?
You're as important as anybody else. And I'm glad you called in, and I'm happy to make contact with you. And I don't have to rush you off. It's to me, it's an honor that you call.
Wow.
An honor, because George doesn't invite very many people into his life. Mm. You know? I consider it a privilege. And if I don't get a chance to talk to you, I want to wish you the best of holidays, George.
I reciprocate those wonderful light thoughts. Thank you.
Sure. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I can't go further than George, you know? I just can't. Beautiful people. Hey, I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to get in touch with me, you can send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com, call me at 212-757-4488. Best to all of you. I look forward to being with you again on Tuesday.